Hello, everyone. Welcome to our live Election 2020 watch party. I'm Tricia Rose, and I'm co-host of The Tightrope, along with my dear friend, Cornell West. We are pleased to be part of the new Real News Network family, and Cornell and I will be with you until midnight. If I can stay awake that long, I'm going to do my darndest best. Hey, Cornell, how are you doing? How are you hanging on this evening?
As the mighty Dells would say from Chicago, oh, what a night. What a night.
What a night. Oh, what a night. And I mean, it feels as though we've all been working ourselves up to this moment for months and months on end. And everybody's so anxious about it. I've never seen so much attention to an election. Do you recall any election that feels as urgent on the ground as this one does?
No, I don't. I know Nixon in 68 and Reagan in 80, we were at a fork in the road and we made the wrong turn in both cases.
But we didn't have a map, brother. We didn't have a map.
I hear you. But no, this is a big one. You know, we talk about the future of the planet, the future of democracy, the future of civilized relations in a certain sense. So we shall see. But I don't know. You know, I don't have my expectations too high. But on the other hand, I'm always welcoming some good news.
Yeah. And, you know, our hopes tonight are, you know, not to so much get ourselves caught up in, you know, how many points here and there, because that's all going to sort itself out as the night goes on. But, you know, I'm hoping that I'm hoping to hear from you and from our wonderful guests this evening about, you know, how to live in the wake of. Right. Because we have to live in the wake of what's happening. Yeah. Right. It doesn't almost matter what happens. We have a lot of living adjustments to make. So, you know, that's where my mind is. That and, you know, being hopeful that this is a landslide of some kind away from fascism. But how might you what are you thinking about? One of the key things we might need to focus on in the wake of. Right. You know, I'd love to hear what you're thinking in that way.
You know, it's at times like these, I think that we have to fortify ourselves to be ready to deal with adverse circumstances, whatever form they are, whatever manifestation that they make, so that we are committed to the truth and justice, no matter what. And that ought to be a sacred fire of truth and justice inside of us that no set of circumstances can dampen. And I think that's the kind of commitment. I've been reading a lot of Dostoevsky today with The Gambler and Alexis and the Russian roulette, society, and Roulette-Berg. That was the original title of that great novella. But this whole sense of being intoxicated with the now, with no sense of the past, no sense of the future, obsessed with this certain titillation of truncated, meretricious so-called greatness, and the way in which that leads toward undercutting any serious future. I think that's a sobering kind of reminder of how deep our dedication needs to be in such a grim moment. But we'll see what the election results, I have to say. We want to be open-minded. But as you say, anyway, we're looking much deeper than just the kind of superficial question of numbers here.
Right. Yes. But, you know, truth and justice, I mean, this is a fire that will need some stoking. We're going to need to, you know, have somebody minding and tending that fire because, you know, it's looking like some smoky embers.
That's true.
But we've got a fantastic group of people, don't we, Cornell?
We do. We got a cloud of witnesses tonight.
Yes, we do. We're very fortunate. And from all different kinds of perspectives and, you know, some scholars, some spiritual leaders, musicians, activists, writers, you know, and that takes a village of critical thinking and heart open people to figure this out. And also, even if we don't figure it out, just to make it to the next way station. You know, it's one way station at a time. No,
and we need some folk to speak to our spirits. You know, we need some spiritual warriors. We need some artistic warriors so that we don't reduce this just to the same old dialogue about election results. We want to make people feel as if they can plug into something much deeper so that they can be marathon runners rather than sprinters.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, we really do. And our first segment tonight is with two amazing people, Father Flager and Christian Scott Atunde Ajua. Thank you both so much for joining us here on The Tightrope. We're thrilled to have you both, incredibly inspiring people. So let Cornell, I'm going to let you take it away here because you know both of these gentlemen very well, and I'll add a couple of comments here and there. But why don't we turn it over to you?
Oh, we've got two magnificent love warriors. I'm telling you, Brother Flager, we go back 35 years preaching in his church for 27 years on the south side of Chicago, strong as ever. And here comes Brother Christian himself with that family of artistic nobility from New Orleans. Indeed. Mm. Brother Flager, could you want to give us just a real short little ecumenical prayer, brother? Because we start off in that spiritual, then of course Christian got insight. But then he's got the artistic thing with the music. Could you start with just a very little brief prayer, though, brother?
Yeah, God, we come before you because we know you're the God of truth, and you're the God of justice, and you're the God of love. And we understand because you are God of truth, justice, and love that they win. And we must never become discouraged with the battle and with the fight, with the darkness or the evils or the attacks that come around us, understanding that the battle has already won. And ours is just to continue to pick up and fight and walk to the winning point to be our more than conquerors. So give us the strength, give us the vision, and continue to give us the courage. Amen.
Amen. Amen. So I just want to ask both of you, what are on your heart, minds, and souls today, this historic election moment?
Yeah, I think for me, you know, something that the Father spoke to, you know, is about courage. And, you know, so much of what we do is about creating courage, you know, with the music that we create, you know, we call stretch music and more or less it's really about a reevaluation and sort of taking the time to sharpen the tools that are requisite to communicate effectively. And so, you know, I think when we are, you know, encroaching a moment, you know, like this, I think, you know, the hearts and minds of so many people, you know, they there's so much fear that is in the environment that a lot of times we don't take the time to actually give an accurate appraisal of all of the things that we have had the ability to walk through and to trespass and to move forward through. So, you know, for us and for the work that I do, you know, so much of it is wrapped around that reevaluation. And, you know, it's in a very important junction in this moment artistically as well, because so many people are becoming intentional about decolonializing these spaces, right? And the type of work that's also requisite, you know, to do that in a way that fosters life. And so, you know, for me in this moment, it really just becomes about, you know, doing the work that I have to do to make sure that the next generation of practitioners that come out of this culture, one, have an accurate depiction of where this music comes from, the utility of this music, and you know, and its ability to help us communicate things, our humanity, in certain spaces where maybe you may be persona non grata, and to also, you know, refine the tools and the means by which the next generation is going to do that. So, you know, in the moment where we're walking into what's going on with the election, I think it's also very important for people to take the time that's requisite for them to sharpen the things that they need to sharpen to push this ball forward.
I want our listeners to hear that stretch music.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
When you go to St. Sabina, you're going to get your soul stretch your courage and still, Brother Flager, what you want to say, my dear brother?
well, that is going on what Christian just said. I think we must be about making sure that we're empowering and uplifting those creators of the future, that they don't get overwhelmed or discouraged or heavied by this atmosphere that we're in right now and this darkness in our country. But at the same time, we say that I think we have to look at the real picture tonight. And I think this election to me is really much bigger than Trump or Biden. To me, this is a statement about America and where America is and who America is. And really, there's a sadness. And I think in a sense, no matter who wins tonight, America has already lost. And I say that because I think the fact that this is even a close race is a discouraging statement about the country. I think Donald Trump certainly did not, he did not begin racism in America. He made the racists comfortable. He emboldened them. He fueled them. And he allowed them to be comfortable in this country being very public. But I think what he also did is expose the real America. And we've, under this pretense that America is this wonderful country and the land of the free and the home of the brave, and America is not. It's never been a good country. It's never been a great country. And I think he has exposed that to show us the real America. And now I think what we have to do is say, so what do we do about this? Now that we've seen this America, no matter who wins, the real work begins on tomorrow. And how do we empower, particularly our young people, to say, to rise up now and decide what kind of America do we want? Forgetting whoever becomes the president is still Pharaoh in the seat. Our job is to say, how are we going to dismantle the systems that make America who it is and continue to keep people oppressed in this country? And I think that's the task before us. And understanding we can do that. You know, that's the element of faith. You know, as I've told you, Dr. West, many times, I'm, because of my faith, I'm a prisoner of hope. Hope wins. Justice wins. Love wins. Truth wins. And we got to remember that. And then we go out and we fight. We must dismantle the systems that have been set up to continue this country as it is. And our work begins afterwards. But I think this election is a statement about who we are as America.
Yeah. Yeah. I also worry about, you know, making sure that young people feel as though they have a voice and a sense of hope and possibility. And Christian, a lot of your, you know, community work is incredibly powerful because it's not only sort of social justice work. It extends the role of the tradition of the arts in African-American music and beyond to be a source of empowerment. Can you talk a little bit about your vision for that and how you are, you know, what you're planning to do, particularly in New Orleans, where the music tradition is so rich and so important, and the resources on the ground have been so depleted?
Well, you know, the work is really more of an extension of a cultural imperative that, you know, I was sort of brought up in. You know, my family, you know, as Dr. West spoke about as well, you know, I come from a space that, you know, it's really unique American space in that my grandfather was a tribal chieftain, you know, maybe arguably one of the most notable Black Indian chieftains of Louisiana. I was coronated as chief 4 years ago. And so I am now chief. And so most of the work that we're doing in this space is really, you know, just an extension of the work that we have to do as community leaders. You know, this is a group of people in a community that has, you know, had to sort of exist in open rebellion to the American state since before it was America in that region. Right. And this is a community that continues that work, you know, to try and make sure that the indigenous cultural arts stay alive. And so, you know, it's just by happenstance that I ended up also becoming a practitioner in the creative improvised music, or stretch music, the jazz culture of music. Obviously, being New Orleanian, that's not very difficult to do. You can pitch a rock and hit a great trumpeter. But, you know, I grew up in a household where, you know, my grandfather was a chieftain and was, you know, revered because of his unwillingness to yield as it related to procurement of the sort of resources that we need to get over the humps that we're speaking about this moment. But also, you know, my grandmother, you know, she runs a non-for-profit. For years before that, maybe 30, 40 years, she ran a nursery. So she also raised my community. So these are the examples that I'm seeing as a younger person. And so I think it would have been really difficult for me to become an adult and to grow into what I wanted to do as a creator and not also tether all of those other components to it. So, you know, when I'm speaking about courage creation, when I'm speaking about, you know, the utility of creative improvised music or jazz music and its ability to communicate these facets of our experiences and how dynamic those experiences are. When I'm speaking to all those things, it still ends up being an extension of my role as a tribal chieftain in New Orleans. And so, you know, I know that even though that is one very specific culture, we have so many different versions of that in New Orleans. And so, you know, my experience, you know, none of this stuff is by accident. I'm a person that was a beneficiary of a lot of love and a lot of patience and a lot of conversations that made sure that I developed a critical thinking mechanism and conversations that made sure that I was susceptible to fact. And so that when I was in spaces speaking about certain things, that it wasn't conjecture and there were things that were happening coming up naturally from what I'm actually experiencing. And so, you know, the work continues, but we're looking forward to tomorrow and the work that is going to continue in that moment in creating courage.
You know, Brother Flavius mentioned this issue of greatness and how there's a serious battle right now over what we understand greatness to be. Brother Flay has got a number of pictures right there behind him. I've been blessed to be there many, 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 many times. And they're nothing but just magnificently great folk, Martin King, Rosa Parks, and so forth. Brother Christian comes, he talked about the exemplary great folk in New Orleans, great in terms of courage, compassion, service to the least of these, consistency and constancy, not because one is perfect or pure, but one is continually trying to keep the focus on truth, a focus on justice. What happens today, whichever way we go, in terms of that legacy of spiritual, moral, artistic, human greatness, not Alexander the Great, not Napoleon, not Genghis Khan. We're talking about real greatness in the deep sense.
Well, I think, Doctor, that one of the things is there has to be a reawakening of the faith communities. I blame the condition of our country mostly on the faith communities. When you talk about the greatness of a Dr. King or of a Malcolm X or of a Rosa Parks, and you look at that and you have to understand that. Dr. King said, you know, we must and we will pass laws to make racism wrong, to make segregation wrong, to make sitting in the back of the bus wrong and not being able to vote wrong. But he said it is the faith communities that must change the heart. We can't pass a law to change the heart. And until we change the heart of people and of this country, we are going to continue to be band-aiding the problems. And I think the faith communities are
I think we lost him there for a minute.
Oh, is he frozen there a little bit?
Yeah, we might have lost him.
Okay, well, we'll wait for him to come back on this.
No, indeed. No, your brother Christian looks like you're about to finish his sentence, my brother.
Yeah, you know, I want to wait for him to come back, but, you know, I think he raised, you know, something that's, you know, really, really thought-provoking in that, you know, and for me, when I think about that, I always think about, you know, someone says the faith-based communities, I think about what it is that we do, and jazz essentially being also a faith-based community, right? Because of what it is has represented for so long. And so I think, you know, when we're talking about, the, you know, what we are contributing, you know, a component of that is also the artistic expression as an extension of faith-based communities, right? You know, I think in a moment like this, you know, also where we are also engaging with millennials and, you know, the younger generation is coming up and coming into the fold in a moment where, you know, their relationship to traditional faith-based communities may not be as linear. I think, you know, the arts is also a way to connect those dots and to show people that, you know, they are connected to something larger, and that, you know, you spoke about, you know, people getting up every day willing to try. You know, when we're speaking about faith-based, you know, if you're on a bandstand, you know, and you're playing at 300 BPM, playing Donnelly or something like that, you're going to have faith to get through those things, no matter how well you are prepared. The art, you know, specifically with jazz music, is also designed in a way that challenges you to ascend into your greatest self. And so, you know, hearing what it is that he's saying in that moment, you know, I think he's absolutely right, but I would just like to pair that with the necessity of the artistic contribution being tethered to those things, as also as a generational marker.
Right, right. That's a very profound connection, because it's not just churches or mosques or synagogues, right? But the notion of faith and also the unknowability, right, of the kind of, you know, when you listen to amazing music and you just have this feeling that you don't have words for, there's a certain level of spirit involved there. But I wanted to make sure that I asked you about your March 2020 release of a live performance at the Blue Note in New York City called Axiom. I understand you recorded this last record, what, a few weeks before the shutdown, sometime in March 2020.
Yeah,
tell us about the recording and why you called it Axiom, and what the heck happened? Did you get out of the club all right? You know, what happened?
Well, you know, the recording, we had an amazing time doing it. You know, we had no idea that what was going to, you know, happen was going to happen. You know, so we were in the middle of a run. The next week we were supposed to go to the Kennedy Center, and then the week after that we were supposed to be in Jakarta. And so, you know, the band was really excited to record and document the record. And, you know, so much of the music that we make in this moment has been sort of designed as sort of studio records. You know, the templates have been designed with a bunch of layerings of, you know, some of the West African instruments that you see behind me, to sort of illuminate the harmony and the melody that exists in African music. You know, I say that to say, in the traditional definition of jazz, after it was codified as being America's classical music, there was an energy around making sure that it was labeled as equal parts West African rhythm and European harmony, which, you know, for most of its practitioners, they found problems in that, because it showed that someone felt that there were no harmonic traditions in West Africa, which obviously there are. If you go to Bamako, you know, it's Burkina Faso, or any of these places, and walk around and audit the creative spaces, you will hear music that sounds frighteningly similar to the Delta blues, right? If you're walking around in Mali, you hear stuff that sounds like Robert Johnson. And so we've been making records with that sort of mindset for the last 5 or 6 years. But I also wanted to make another live record. It had been maybe 6 or 7 years since we did one, and the energy is also very different in that. It's not something that's being created in a reservoir where things are being sharpened and edited, but it's actually what's happening in that moment. And because of what was going on in our country politically, what was going on socially and culturally in those moments, you know, we saw that it was a necessary thing to create something that you could not divorce. It wasn't abstraction so much, right?
Right.
It was something that was like, it happened in that moment. This is what we said. This is what's going on. You know, when people listen to the record, I think at the end of the first song and on the recording, you know, I speak to people and let them know, thank you for coming out. You know, we want you to know that you are safe and you're free to express yourselves as long as you cover your mouth when you do it. So the reality of the virus was clear in that moment, you know, and so we had to fight to continue to play in that space. But, you know, for me, what I loved about documenting Axiom in that moment as well is you could hear the sense of urgency in that moment. Some of the stories and things that I say and I bring up about the compositions and the necessity of having compassion and seeing other people and realizing that anytime you engage with another person that you are looking in a mirror, right? And those sort of energies, to be able to actually say those things in a forum like that and to give that to people, walking into a moment where everyone was, you know, sort of you know, had to go inside and to sort of, you know, to, for lack of a better way of putting it, hide from some of the things that were going on. I think that it was really important to make that document as a courage creating document. And so we had a good time.
Absolutely. Well, I'm glad you got that in before they shut everything down.
We really had to fight.
Yeah, I bet you did. I bet you did, especially given New York's density. But we unfortunately are going to have to keep moving. We're going to have you back later on in the show. You're going to play something for us, and you know we'll be able to talk some more in a couple of hours. And we're really thrilled and looking forward to that. And we're sorry that we lost Father Flager. I think we had technological difficulties. But he's with us in spirit, and we're with him in solidarity for sure. So at this point, thank you, Christian. We'll see you again in a little while. Now we really want to toss this to Christian Scott and take some spiritual balm on the way out. Thanks, Doc, in case I don't get to say goodnight to you.
Always
thank
a
you
blessing,
for everything.
My dear sister Tricia.
All right.
Always a blessing.
All right. Excellent. Me too.
My brother
Christian
got his
Scott.
Act out looking like a little Dizzy Gillespie. Little Dizzy Gillespie, that brother.
I'm trying to catch up still. Thank you, guys. Thank you, teacher. Thank you.